Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction novel that I read as I read it. As I said before, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish reading the novel, I'll stick it up here on the podcast feed. Or if I'm on a cruise ship or away and I don't have internet access, I'll do the review and upload it a while later. Tonight, I'm trying something slightly different with this episode. Because I've already recorded two episodes today, and I wasn't planning on doing one this late at night. It's coming to about 11 o'clock. And so something new, I'm reviewing a novel which I finished reading this morning while I'm drunk, because I've had quite a few drinks tonight. But I'll give it a go anyway. If this doesn't work, if I fall asleep by the end of this review, I'll do another recording tomorrow. So the novel that I'm reviewing this time out is by Ian Banks, and it's called The End of Eternity. No, it's not. It's called Transition. Not by Ian M. Banks, it's by Ian Banks. I'm not quite sure why it's by Ian Banks rather than Ian M. Banks, because if you know what Ian M. Banks does, he's a sci-fi writer, and he's the same person as Ian Banks, who's not a sci-fi writer. He does literary fiction or thrillers, or you know, but not so much sci-fi stuff there. But this one is being sold, I guess, as a non-science fiction, but it is very much science fiction, or sort of more maybe fantasy kind of thing. I'm not quite sure how you'd want to describe it, sort of like modern day fantasy. And my little jab with calling it The End of Eternity, it's sort of like a play on that novel. Now, if you've never read End of Eternity by Isaac Asimov, it is probably his, I think, because I was trying to think of a good novel, because someone said what's Isaac Asimov's best novel, and I was thinking maybe, you know, I was thinking maybe some of his detective novels, like The Caves of Steel or something like that, because I always much prefer Isaac Asimov's short stories rather than his novels. And then someone said, what about The End of Eternity? And I was like, yeah, that's probably it. Probably one of his best novels there. So read that, and that's really good. That's all I can say. So other people who reviewed Transition by Ian Banks might have brought up the connection to End of Eternity, but it really is sort of very much the same kind of novel, and I'll get onto it in a bit. But again, I haven't actually read other reviews of this novel, but except the only ones I've read, or the only things buzz that I've heard about this is meant to be some kind of return to form for Ian Banks or Ian M. Banks and stuff, which, to be honest, I really want a return to form for Ian Banks. I'm not quite sure if this is it, because for example, like I read this before, well not this before, I read some novels, his other recent science fiction novels, there was The Algebraist, no, Look to Windward, awesome, really really enjoyed Look to Windward, then his next one was a non-culture novel called The Algebraist, and I didn't really enjoy that very much. Well, it was a good enough read, but it didn't really stand up compared to his previous science fiction. And then the last culture novel that he did was called Matter, and I reviewed that before, and again, it sort of like it really dragged out and long, and it went all over, meandered over the place, and the ending wasn't that satisfying. And again, I could sort of see what he was going with it, but it just wasn't enjoyable. And I was talking to Sophie, the owner of the English bookshop, the second-hand English bookshop around the corner from where I live back in Berlin, and she was like, well, what about it? And I was like, well, you know, after The Algebraist and after Matter, I'm not going to go out and buy this novel new. I'm not going to buy it in hardback. I'm not going to buy it in paperback. I'm just going to, you know, hang out, and if I feel like buying it in the future as an impulse, because, you know, Ian M. Banks is sort of like his track record recently with his science fiction hasn't been all that great. But then I found it here in the library the other day, and here when, because I'm working on the Queen Mary 2, big cruise ship, it's got a quite a good, well-stocked library, and I saw it there. It's a new book, and I thought, well, I'll check it out. So I thought I would read it, and it's a quick read. Really is quite an easy read to get through. No problem there at all. But yeah, so I finished it already. Finished it, yes, this morning, yes, sometime. So the world that this novel is set in, well, it's not just world, it is world, because there's many, many parallel universes all running at the same time. Some are very much like Earth, some are a bit better than Earth, some are a bit worse than Earth, some are running ahead of Earth slightly, some are running behind. In some, different countries are in ascendancy and the different people speak more different languages and all this kind of stuff. So you've got all these infinite, well, sort of an infinite number of parallel universes. And what someone obviously in the past has discovered, like it sort of says about 1,000 years in the past, someone has discovered that you can flit between worlds or flicker between these different worlds. And the way that you do it is you take this drug called septum and you sort of go nom 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 nom. And then you imagine the opposite world or the other timeline or the other parallel universe that you want to be in, and you flit across there. And what happens is that you don't, your body doesn't go across, but your mind goes across and sort of takes over the mind and conscience of someone else. So if you think like, I guess the easiest way to describe it is a bit like Quantum Leap. So you're sort of Scott Bakula, I guess his name is, and he would go across and he would take over somebody else's brain and somebody else's situation. And so there's lots of people who can do this, but they have to have the drug called septum to be able to do it. And the people who've worked this out set up this organization called CONCERN. And CONCERN is like this organization which spans many worlds, and they track the worlds, and they go to other worlds which are very similar but running a little bit fast, and then they go back to these other worlds which are running a bit slower, and they say, hey, one second, if we put this person there and tell this person this, they'll change something and the world will be better in that situation. Or if we go and kill this person, assassinate this person, then the world will be better for that timeline. And so that's the idea. And this organization is very, very much like the same organization in Isaac Asimov's The End of Eternity. What they would do, it wasn't sort of many universes, it was one universe, but they could travel backwards and forwards in time. And the different eras had different problems, and they would help out all the different eras with their problems. So it's very, very similar. Like, the ideas that he's coming up with are very interesting. But otherwise, the worlds that you visit, some have got lots of humans, some don't have any humans in them. And that's it, really. So that's the setup that we have. Not a whole lot of technology going on, except for this skipping between. So it's much more fantasy rather than science fiction. I'll get onto that a bit later. The plot of the novel. You start off, and there's lots of different characters, and there's lots of different first-person narratives, but you realize quite soon that these are different people, even though they're all talking in the first person. And they've got different titles. One of them is called Adrian, one of them's called The Transitionary, one of them's called The Philosopher, another one's called Patient 8625, or whatever his number is. And you're going, okay, these narratives are obviously linked. And the plot is also moving backwards and forwards in time. So one thing happens, and then it skips backwards here, and then it skips forward there and stuff like that. So the scenes are all out of order, but in a very sort of like impressively out of order. So they're not running like A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and they're not running like 9, 7, 8, 5, 6, 5. You know, it's they are going quite all over the place there. And this could be confusing. However, I found it very natural to think in this way straight away. Mainly, I think, because this technique of getting a cast of characters, and you know from the start that some of them might be the same character, but you're not quite sure who might be the same character as the other. And, you know, the whole story is told out of time, and there's this big puzzle of what it's... This is what I did in my novel, Minding Tomorrow. So this is how I've constructed a narrative of my own, and with a puzzle of different things and going in. So as soon as I started reading, I was like, oh, Ian M. Banks is what... he wrote a book last year like I did 2 years ago with very much a similar kind of thing. Although, you know, I'm not saying that, hey, I did this before Ian Banks, because with my novel Mining Tomorrow, was I sort of wrote in that way inspired by some of Ian M. Banks's previous work. So I'm, you know, this is the kind of thing that he's had in him and in his writing, or some of these similar ideas in his writing beforehand. So I'm not trying to say, hey, I'm cleverer than Ian Banks to come up with this before him, because, you know, I don't want to say that. But because I wrote a novel which is sort of has a very similar setup and a very similar puzzle to it, as you know, as you're going through at least the first third, two thirds of this novel, before you sort of get this puzzle sorted out and then this plot starts picking up. That's the same kind of thing that I was going for with my own novel. So it's quite complex and quite strange, but there it is. But the plot itself, what you have is like you get this leader of the concern. She's this French woman called, what is it? De Orlatan, Madame de Orlatan, or whatever her name is, and she gives this order to an assassin right at the very beginning of the book, and she says, what I want you to do is, you got the order to round up all these different board members of the concern, but I don't want you to just round them up, I want you to kill them all. And so the idea is that she's wanting to get rid of all of her competition in the running of concern, and of course the assassin, the hitman, the transitionary, he doesn't do it. He goes off and does something else. And so that's what's happening. But that's actually taking place later on if you actually look at things sort of like objectively or from like the overall timeline. So that's actually happening quite late on in the plot. But then it's happening early on in the book. And then you skip forward and backwards and you find out why he didn't follow the orders. And then you find out why she gave those orders. And you find out not just who this sort of D'Orlatan is, but you find out sort of like who she's working against and the reason why she's working against. And this is all told in lots of different flashbacks and lots of different ways and with lots of different characters doing that kind of thing. The thing is that I didn't like about the plot, well, for a start, is that there isn't actually much plot. There is a plot, and let me just look at the book. How many pages has this got? It's probably maybe like 300 or 400 pages. Let me check this out. Yeah, 399, 400 pages here to the novel. It's probably only about 100 pages worth of plot in there, and the rest of it is filled up with other things, you know, sort of descriptions of places and different characters telling their story. And of course, they are telling story, but their story only comments on the broader themes of the novel rather than on the plot, so which is a bit of a pity. But again, this is the same kind of thing that Ian M. Banks does quite often. A lot of his novels, they're quite light on plot, but they have a lot of world building and they have a lot of thematic exploration. They have a lot of characters doing interesting things. But this time, it was a little bit too clumsily put together in a way, which is a real pity, because the subplots that he's talking about and the different characters telling their story and telling their backstory, they're actually quite interesting stories in a way, and I wouldn't mind reading about them. But once you get to them, they sort of bog down, and you're always thinking, well, how is this going to play into the main plot, and how is this going to play into the main plot? And I don't want to give it away too much, but they don't really. It just says, oh, we meet a character here, and this is what they've been doing all this time. And you're like, well, that doesn't actually help out. That doesn't inform us about the world that they're in or the decisions that they're making very much at all. And that's a bad thing. Also, a lot of the things go unexplained, and I don't mind things going unexplained, because you can sort of come up with ideas of how or what's happening or why this person did that or who this person was or what that event was happening upstairs when and you think, well, what was going on? And the characters go, what was going on upstairs? And the question's never answered. The thing is, to answer the questions in any kind of sensible way or interesting way or way that makes sense, you'd actually have to break other parts of the plot. For example, one thing happens and this character never finds it out, and you're thinking, if that event actually had anything to do with the rest of the plot, it means that the other characters would have known where that character was hiding, and he wouldn't have been able to hide because they'd have known where he is. And then you're thinking, well, if he wasn't hiding, it would have just been a massive coincidence, or someone else was pulling so many strings behind his back that if they had the power to pull that many strings behind the back, he wouldn't be in that situation. So it's a bit annoying that the unexplained stuff seems to break the plot rather than enhance the plot. And another thing which I didn't like about the plot was that so much was happening away from the main characters. You've got this main character who is called the Transitionary, and because he's the guy who transitions between these different realities. He's the one who flips in between them. But then there's a lot of stuff that he's not party to and is happening elsewhere. But then we don't follow the events elsewhere. We're just told them. So literally, he gets into a conversation and they say, ah, this is what's happening here and this is what's happening here. And it's like, oh, okay. And he's quite sort of cynical. Well, not so much cynical. He's quite uninvolved. He goes, well, this has happened to me and I'll report it to my superiors. So he's quite idealistic in some ways, but like he's just following along, really naive is what I'm trying to say, naive and a bit passive, but at the same time he has this kind of cynical view of what he's doing. It's sort of like, oh, I'm just doing my job, oh yeah, I'm just doing it for a paycheck or something like that. And it's a very strange thing with his character, and it doesn't really, again, it's like I was saying in the previous novel, where you have like different, you have a story going, or was it two reviews ago, I can't remember, with The City and the City, you've got a story being told, but that's not actually the interesting story that I want to hear, and there's other stories being told, and it's like, yeah, but the actual action is happening elsewhere, and if we just got that story, it would have been more interesting, I think, I'm not sure. So, the characters in the novel, some of them, like I said before, overlap, and you're not quite sure who is who. You get these different titles, but you're not told the names. And then because it's told, a lot of the narrative is told in first person, they never refer to their own name, or they're telling their story in one time, and then they're telling the story again in another time in first person, or maybe one of them is third person, and then the same person also tells their story in first person, but from like a different time point of view and stuff like that. So there is this puzzle of who is who and who's overlapping with who. But the main characters are, you get this Madame Dorlatan, she's the leader of the concern, or one of the main leaders of the concern. You got her main rival, which her name is Mrs. Mulverhill, and she's the main opposition to Dorlatan. You got the transitionary, whose name is O Temerin or something, and he's got a strange name, but you know, because everyone calls it, oh, that's a way strange name, because his name is O. He's like our main character, and we follow his story, I guess, he's the main character, probably, I guess. Then you got this philosopher, who is this interrogator, torturer kind of guy. We follow a lot of his backstory, but unfortunately, there's a lot of preaching in his backstory, but not a whole lot that brings us in through into the plot at all. And there's another character similar that we get his full backstory. His name is Adrian. He's like a city trader. He runs a hedge fund. And he can does come in later. He comes into the story later on. But the amount of screen time, or the amount of page content which is given over to some of these smaller characters, you think I'd like them to have had a bit more of an impact on the plot or the story or the other characters, and they just don't, which is a real pity. There are other smaller characters as well, and you're thinking, okay, who is who here, and who's this person here? You've got the patient who's thinking he's hiding, and you're not quite sure who this character is or where they're fitting in the timeline as well. And you've got this guy who's a pitcher, and he pitches movie ideas, and there's other smaller characters as well, but again, I don't want to say too much because some of the characters overlap, and I don't want to give that away because the puzzle is one interesting part here. The technology in the book isn't explained at all. If you're thinking there is some kind of technology behind flitting from one alternative universe into another, one timeline into another, really it's just like, oh, you take a pill and then you think about it and you get there. And there's no sort of mechanism for this attempted or bothered with. In a way, to be kind, I'd say it's left mysterious. To be unkind, it's like Ian M. Banks didn't really think it through very much. I think I'm going to have to be unkind, because there's it's like he hasn't even bothered putting in places any rules, and what rules there are sort of broken later on in the novel by the sort of deus ex machina kind of machinations that go on at the end to get people out of plot holes and things like that. But then there is loads of plot holes. For example, one of the rules is that you can only, when you flit from one reality to another, you have to go from one person's brain, your own brain, into another person's brain and consciousness in a different alternative place. However, at one point in the book, they go to a planet where there are no humans. And I'm like, well, how did they get there if there are no humans? And which is a bit strange. And there's another thing, it's sort of like, okay, so all of the people, when they're not working, they live on a single planet. All of these different transitionary operatives going on. There's lots of different kinds. I don't want to go into it now. I mean, that's what you read the book for, to discover all these different details. But they say they all live on a single planet. And I'm like, well, they all also have to have a home body. So whichever body is their own body, when they go away from it, nobody else is looking after the body, so they sort of all go dumb and start dribbling and don't really pay attention to anything. They sort of, like, they've had a lobotomy. Actually says it's like you've had a lobotomy, and then they go into a different body and they take it over, and then when they leave the body that they've taken over, the original person who was there sort of wakes up again and starts controlling the body, and then they go back into their own body back home. However, the only way to have everyone, all of these people living on a single planet, all these different operatives and all these different concern kind of people living on a planet, is if they all came from there in the first place. Because if they're just on the planet, like, living in somebody else's body, and they have a home there, and they leave that planet, or they leave that timeline and go and to a different Earth timeline and go into a different body, the body that they're in back home would suddenly revert back to the person whose body it was. And I'm thinking, well, how would that work then? And then there's another time when they tell you that you can, like, when you get old, these people get old and they transition into a new body so they don't have to work about it. But I'm thinking, well, where do they get these new bodies from? If they transition into it and then they leave it again, that's not their own body. As soon as they leave it for the first time, after going into it for the first time, it reverts back to the original owner of the body and it's not theirs anymore. And there's so many of these different things. Also, there's like an idea that they say, oh, well, you can, if you're traveling on an aeroplane and you flit across to another body in a different place, you'll go into somewhere which is close by, like another aeroplane. And they say, oh, what might happen? The legend is that, the idea is, or the myth is, the urban legend is that you flit into a different body, but you're not in a plane and you're just falling in midair. And then I'm thinking, well, why would anyone just be hanging out in midair? And there's other times you can take things with you when you flit, and other times that you can't take things with you, and sometimes you can take somebody else with you. And then so another time, like, a character just turns up and they're just naked somewhere, and I'm like, well, did they flit into a body that was just hanging out naked, or did they take their own body with them? And another character always seems to turn up and she always looks the same, and they're always talking about, oh yes, she's in a new young body. It's like, yeah, but if she's got a new young body, she only has a new young body in one timeline, unless she's got a young new body in every timeline she goes to, and they're all exact. And there's just so many plot holes and so many holes with this mechanism of flitting between different ways, different places, which is a real pity, because it could be a good idea, or it could, I mean, it's been done so many times before, and it's really like he's just gone, well, I've got this idea, you can flip between different bodies, but you know, all the rules of it and what would happen really and all this kind of stuff, can't be bothered to work that all out, so I'll just skip over it. And actually, let me just tell you, just read you the very first part of the novel here. It actually goes like this. It goes, transition, and you flick through Ian Banks, transition, next page for Alistair LA, and it goes, so just before the prologue, it goes, transition based on a false story. And you're like, oh, that's quite interesting. And then the prologue, it goes, the opening line is like, apparently I'm what is known as an unreliable narrator. Though, of course, if you believe everything you're told, you deserve what you get. And I'm like, okay, so an unreliable narrator. And then it goes on and it tells you all these different stories, and it gets to the end, and then it's like, oh, I did this, and it's like, oh no, actually, I lied, I didn't do this, I did that. And I'm like, okay, so we do have an unreliable narrator. But how much is this, what I'm reading just rubbish that's made up and stuff that he's come up with in his own head and thought, well, I could tell you the truth as it actually happened, but then I might as well just tell you how it might have happened on an alternative timeline, you know. And it's that kind of thing, and I'm thinking, well, what is actually going on? Because what's the rules that are being put across in the novel by all of the different people, not just by the unreliable narrator, but by all of them, if that's actually the truth and is actually what's happening, nothing makes sense. And it's a real pity. And I keep saying it's a real pity, because otherwise the novel's a quick read, it's a fast read, there's some interesting characters, there's different things going on there, but it just doesn't hold together as either a science fiction novel or as a fantasy or anything really, because it just plays so loose with everything. Now, it might be intentional, but if it is intentional, it's intentionally not very good. And I don't see what the point is of writing a novel like this, which is just so, like, shoddily put together in terms of the rules of the world. And maybe that's why it isn't an Ian M. Banks, it's just an Ian Banks. But then so many of his other novels that I've read, which aren't science fiction, they have, like, they're well plotted. That's all I can say. You know, if you've read Wit, which is an all right novel, and it talks about this, you know, family from Scotland, and they're interesting and stuff like that, and it works out. And like another novel, which is, it sort of has sort of echoes in this book, is The Business, again by Ian Banks, and it talks about this sort of conspiracy where there are people running things behind the scenes, but it works out. The plotting is good, it makes sense, the rules are consistent throughout. Even if it's not science fiction, it still has like a set of rules of engagement. It's got like The Business is set up in this way, and then the rest of the book is done that way. Whereas here, it just flows around all over the point, all over the place, which is annoying. The writing, like I say, it's got multiple first-person narration, which is nice, actually. I quite like it. And overall, it is a very easy read. It's very light-going. Ian Banks does very good characters, very good dialogue, and he describes things very interestingly, and he's got very good writing. And like I say, the opening is good, and the way it closes and the way it transitions from one scene to the next is also very good. But then there are some like a bit lazy touches. For example, lots of times, one character in particular, one female character in particular, just says what she's thinking. She's like, "Oh, I think this should happen. I think that should happen. And this is what I'm going to do. And this is what happens. And what do you think? Oh, I think that. Oh, that's great, like that." And it's actually quite boring for her just to lay things out because she doesn't act it. She doesn't show it. She tells it, which is one of those things that you always says, you know, when you're writing, it's sort of like writing 101, show, don't tell. And she's just sitting there telling. Now, to make this dialogue or these monologues more interesting, he two or three times in the novel just goes, okay, and they're having sex and they're having this conversation. I'm like, just because they're having sex doesn't make this monologue or expository dialogue any more interesting or relevant or anything. It just sort of makes it annoying because it's like a sex scene made up with boring writing, or then it's just interesting. What could have been interesting writing sort of interrupted now and then by some weird foot wanking is all I can express it as. And it's, again, it's just sometimes you just think, okay, maybe you're trying to be shocking, and you know, there is a lot of violence and there is a lot of sex and things like that, which I don't mind. I think it's great. Sex and violence is awesome. It's what I read novels for sometimes, but here it was just like it was just a bit shoddily done. And again, it's like transparent, and that's what I don't like about it. When you're just reading a novel and you're like, okay, I can see what you're doing here, and by doing it so blatantly, it's not interesting anymore. And even if you were trying to do it more blatantly to make a statement that you're doing it blatantly and that you're doing it for a reason, it falls flat because there's so many other things that you're doing blatantly bad for a reason, and yeah, all falls apart. So moving on to the themes of the novel, and like I say, even though I actually quite enjoyed reading it, it really fell flat here, because most writings that Ian M. Banks is quite thematically deep in a way that he is talking about stuff, because he's got like with the culture novels, it's like, okay, science fiction, space opera, lots of aliens going around, lasers and spaceships and things like that, but there's always a lot going on in the background, talking about, you know, some kind of extreme communism or capitalism, or, you know, the role of warfare and the role of this in life and that in life. And it's always there, but it's always under the surface. It's always like, this person can represent this, or this faction of aliens can represent this, and the way it plays out, he can comment on the world at large with these different larger scale things going on in the novel. It's not like one person just saying this is good or this is bad, unlike this novel, Transition, where, like I said before, you've got this whole thing about this guy who tortures people and or interrogates strongly. And it's this whole subplot of this character just going, oh, and I tortured this person. And it's like he's just holding me and punching me in the face going, torture is bad. We shouldn't let people torture each other. Torture is bad. And I'm like, great. Okay, so when did you write this? Oh, yeah, 2008, when everyone was like, oh, torture is bad. Is torture bad? Yeah, torture's bad. Of course it's bad. It's like, and what else are you saying about it? Let me think. Nothing. You're not saying anything about it. You're just saying, torture is bad. Well, thanks for telling me that. Great, okay. And now War on Terror. War on Terror is bad. Oh, yeah, War on Terror is bad because what's happening, yeah? Oh, yeah, because we, being War on Terror, we turn out to be just as bad as the terrorists, don't we? We terrorize each other, even though we're talking about War on Terror. Yeah, we do, don't we? Oh, and who are the terrorists? We could be the terrorists. So who could be the terrorists? Well, tell you what, in this book, I'm not going to have the Islamists as terrorists. I'm going to have the Christians as the terrorists. Isn't that clever? Wow, anyone could be a terrorist, couldn't they? And I'm like, wow, isn't this clever? No, it's not. Thank you very much for it. Right, okay. Capitalism. Capitalism is bad, isn't it? Yeah, capitalism is bad. Hedge funds are bad. Oh, yeah, the whole financial crisis is really bad, isn't it? Oh, yeah, these traders, these rogue traders, and these traders going off and doing all this stuff and not caring about anyone. And they're all selfish, and they're all just doing it for a fast buck and for the hookers and the blow and all that kind of stuff. Isn't it bad? Yeah, it's bad. When did you write this? Oh, just after the financial collapse back in 2008, do you think? Yeah, you did, didn't you? Yeah, isn't it bad? Yeah, it's really bad. Isn't it bad that everything's happening here? Yeah, it's bad. Capitalism bad, and trading is bad, and everyone should, you know, look after each other more than, yeah, they should do, and trading the ball bad, yeah. And it's like, oh, great, okay. And libertarianism, isn't it bad? Oh, yeah, libertarian. It just keeps going on like that. It's just, it's like literally characters going, ah, and my role in this novel is not to influence the plot at all. It's just to talk about how torture is bad. And it's just so heavy-handed, and like I say, it's like Ian Banks is just holding me by the collar and punching me in the face with this, and I'm just like, this isn't fun, even though the stories are quite fun. But you can see how little they're playing into the novel, except just to show, hey, you know what, torture's bad, thanks, really, really thanks. I mean, if that's it. So yeah, heavy-handed. So heavy-handed, my hand, I couldn't lift my hand up anymore because my hand was so heavy. No, I couldn't lift, oh, forget it, I'm drunk, I can't do this. Anyway, so they sort of just sit there festering. Now, there is some other kind of slightly more nuanced thematic kind of stuff, and I don't really want to give it away because it's very similar to End of Eternity, and I don't want to spoil two novels. I don't want to spoil End of Eternity, which is a really good novel, by spoiling one of the ideas here, but the whole idea of this guy who's a pitcher, right in the opening chapter, don't want to give it away too much, but he's making this point that there's a way of searching for aliens, and you're thinking, maybe, even though it's not mentioned for around about 300 or 400 pages, or 350 pages, maybe this idea of looking for aliens might come back in later. And of course, because I've read End of Eternity, and then I read that right at the beginning of this book, and I remembered it as I was going, hey, wait a second, this is just End of Eternity. And then by the end of the book, I was like, well, of course that's what the ending is going to be like. And then it comes up and it hits me, and I'm like, well, it's very clever, but really it's been done before. Maybe if you just read End of Eternity, you'll be able to work out the same thing. Slightly different take on it, but I'm thinking, like, End of Eternity did this better, and this book isn't great there. So anyway, that's all I've got to say about this book. In conclusion, not actually as bad as I've probably made it out to be. A lot of bad stuff, but because Ian M. Banks, he does write very well, and he is quite imaginative, and there is an interesting puzzle going on here, and there is interesting stuff, but it really sort of falls flat around the end, and all the stuff that you think, oh, this is going to tie together fantastically then, all these different characters are going to come together, doesn't really come together. So you've got like a really great sort of setup, a bit sort of like not very scientific, fictionally done very well. It's a bit like a bit floppy, but there's good stuff in there all the way through, and I was enjoying reading it all the way through until at the end I was just getting to the end. I was like, well, if that was it, it's like, well, it wasn't really as good as End of Eternity. And a novel that I wrote, I think I did better than what he did. I know it's bad to say that, but like, okay, this can be the sort of, if you like this book, or if you think you like this book, also read these books. End of Eternity by Isaac Asimov, Minding Tomorrow by Luke Burbridge, because they it's like those two novels sort of put together, but not done, done differently, slightly different. Anyway, I can't really explain it, but yeah, read this novel and read my novel as well, and see which one. I can't really say that, but you know, Ian M. Banks is great. But really, diminishing returns now for his latest few novels. It's getting to the point where I didn't bother buying this book. I thought, well, I'll just pick it up maybe at the library, or pick it up later on if I find it secondhand, or for cheaper paperback rather than the new paperbacks and stuff like that, a later edition. But now with future Ian M. Banks novels, I probably just won't bother, because, like, what's the line from the film, the Nick Hornby film, I can't remember it now, with John Cusack in it. You remember the one, in a record shop, and one of the guys says, can earlier genius make up for later crimes against music? And that's what I'm thinking now. I mean, the only novel that I've ever given 5 stars to here on the Science Fiction Book Review podcast was one of Ian M. Banks' books, and some of my favourite some of my favourite science fiction novels are by Ian M. Banks, like Player of Games is awesome, and say, consider Phlebas is awesome, and Look to Windward is awesome, and so many of his science fiction novels are awesome, and some of his non-science fiction novels that I've read are pretty good as well, although, you know, I think maybe not as good as some of the science fiction novels that he writes. But now it's just like, well, I just can't be bothered anymore. Unless he writes a book which just blows everyone away and everyone says, wow, this is really a return to form. But, you know, people said that about Transition. Maybe not. Anyway, I'm going to give it 3 stars because it is, even though it's not that great and it does have a lot of failings, it's still a brisk read. It's not that bad at all. Don't buy it, but if you see it for second hand or in a library or something, pick it up. 3 stars, not bad. Slightly above average. Maybe slightly, I guess. Again, I enjoyed it as I was reading it a lot more than I did at the end because I was just like, oh, man, it's not very good. Anyway, that's it for this review. I hope you enjoyed my sort of slightly maybe slurred, drunken review here. But, you know, I've enjoyed doing it too. You can email me, luke@juggalo.net, if you've got any feedback or if you've got any thoughts. Maybe, actually, this has inspired me to read End of Eternity and review that. So if you want me to do that, email me, because I'm sure I'll be able to find that, no problem. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, which is Luke Burridge on Twitter. You can follow my updates there, which I do give some. Follow me on goodreads.com. Become my friend on goodreads.com and goodreads.com/Luke Burridge, and you can see my updates as I'm reading novels and as I'm putting them in my queue, and you can recommend books to me like that. And also, I will see what you're doing as well, what you're reading too, if you become my friend and you do that. There's quite a few of us now, I've got maybe, 100 friends on there or something like that. A lot of them listeners to the book review podcast, and I always enjoy seeing it when people are putting down a mark to read or currently reading a novel that I've just reviewed. And of course, I'd like to think that they're reading it because I did a review of it and recommended it. Sometimes maybe it's not. If it's a bad book, I think, what are you reading this for? Yeah, and that's about it. You can read my blog, lukeburge.com/blog. There are lots of different updates there, and also read my novels, which are pretty good. I think Minding Tomorrow is better than Transition, but then again, I would, because I wrote it, and I wrote exactly how I want and all I like about stuff. So read Minding Tomorrow, and not this book. That's it. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time. I was going to say, the next book that I'm going to read and review, no idea, because I think I'm going to take it a few times off, but I do have like a 39,000-hour flight back up from New Zealand, back up to Berlin. It's going to take me like 2 days to get home. So I'll probably buy a book in the airport and read it on the plane on the way home. So expect maybe 4 podcast downloads in your iTunes at once. Or let me put it this way. If you're listening to this and you didn't download and listen to the previous 2 reviews of The City and the City by China Mieville and the Prince of Nothing series by R. Scott Back. I did 2 reviews of them. If you didn't get them, go back and listen to them. Download and listen to them on iTunes if it didn't do it automatically. Anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time for the mystery book. Next.